Who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? It's through God's providence we are here tonight. Much good is to be done for the Lord. I'll begin by saying, if only we'll take a stand for Him and do His will. As we take courage, as we take a great stand, we deny ourselves, we give ourselves wholly to God's word, to the church, God's people. God can use us to accomplish great things. You can't help but make such statements and ask such questions when you study and read the book of Esther. That's what we're in tonight. Open your Bibles there with me. The book of Esther, as we look at an overview of the book, one of the greatest stories ever written. What stands out to you about the book of Esther? Reading it, studying it. What's it about? Esther saving her people. Good. You have Esther. That's the principal character whom the book is named after. A young orphan Jewish woman. Through her good character, the actions, the stand that she took, her faith and courage, God's people were delivered from complete destruction. A key verse, chapter 4, in verse 14, one worth memorizing. Mordecai tells Esther, if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then there shall an enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Such a great statement. Shows great faith. Great trust in God and His providence. And another one in verse 16 of Esther's attitude. And when she said, so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So many great lessons to be learned from this great book. What period of history are we in? Period of restoration, or the post-exile period. Right? Just to catch us up, remember, the Jews had been taken into captivity three separate times, 606, 597, 586. That was followed by a period of exile, 70 years captivity in Babylon. Babylon was overtaken by the Persians about 539 BC under King Cyrus. They conquered Babylon, and it was under King Cyrus when he made the decree allowing Israel to return to Jerusalem. We read about that in Ezra chapter 1, that Israel would then be allowed to return to Jerusalem. Thus we have the period of restoration, or the post-exile period. And Israel returns to Jerusalem in three groups. 536, Ezra 1 through 6 covers that under Zerubbabel. Second time in 458 BC, Ezra 7 through 10 covers that. We study that under Ezra. And then again in 445 BC under Nehemiah. The book of Nehemiah covers that. And now in the book of Esther, we really go back in time. We go back about a period of 50 years to between the first return of Israel and the second return of Israel. In Ezra chapter 6 and verse 15, the house of the Lord, the temple, was finished in the sixth year of the reign of Darius the king. And in chapter 7 and in verse 7, we are now in the seventh year of Artaxerxes the king. So there's a period of history between those two chapters, really a period of close to 60 years, about 57 years between those two chapters, chapter 6 and 7. And it's within that period of time, between the first return and the second return, that Esther takes place and the events therein. You might make a note between Ezra 6 and 7, Esther, likewise in Esther, Ezra 6 and 7. And the Jews are in and under the Persian Empire. One group has returned to Jerusalem, but still many Jews are in and under the Persian Empire. At this time, there would have been roughly 2 to 3 million Jews in the empire at this time. That's the setting of the book. Esther chapter 1, we have the king of Persia, Ahasuerus. And we are in Shushan the palace, Shushan or Susa. That's the setting of all the books, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther in the period of restoration. Thus, you have mentioned multiple times kings of Persia, like Cyrus, first of all, Ezra 1, verse 1, and Artaxerxes and Ahasuerus and Darius, different ones, and also this place, Shushan or Susa, where the palace was, is mentioned oftentimes. That's the setting of the book under the king and kingdom of Persia. And in light of that, we'll briefly hit upon just the kings of Persia that we have looked at so far and their order. In Ezra 1, of course, we have the first that we read about. Many different kings of Persia throughout history, but only a handful of them are mentioned specifically in the Bible. Those are the ones we'll deal with. Cyrus is first, Cyrus, king of Persia, Ezra 1, verse 1, the one who conquered Babylon, the one who gave the decree for Israel to return to Jerusalem, under which the first return was made. In Ezra 4, we have two others mentioned in verses 6 and 7, in the reign of Ahasuerus, in the beginning of his reign. And then in verse 7, you have Artaxerxes. Understand that just because the same name is repeated different times throughout different chapters or books doesn't mean it's the same person. Just as you might read of Pharaoh in one place or Pharaoh in another place doesn't mean it's the same Pharaoh, same person. Oftentimes kings or leaders or the same name or title. And so we have Cyrus first, then we have an Ahasuerus mentioned here in Ezra 4 and an Artaxerxes. These were not the same kings as in Esther and Ezra 7 and Nehemiah. We know that because these two kings reigned and were appealed to by those during the time of the first return. The first return of Israel had just taken place. They're in Jerusalem working, and it's during that period that these kings are appealed to by their adversaries, and it's under Artaxerxes at this time that the commandment was given to cause the work to cease on the house of the Lord. And that took place prior to the reign of Darius, because the work ceased, and that continued unto the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia, in verse 24. So we have Cyrus, we have these two kings, then we have Darius in chapters 5 and 6 of Ezra, and then we have an Artaxerxes mentioned in chapter 7 and verse 1. Now remember that Esther takes place between Ezra 6 and 7. That would place this Ahasuerus in Esther chapter 1 in that time frame. And then the Artaxerxes in Ezra 7 is the same Artaxerxes of Nehemiah. We don't have time to go into much detail on that, but just to help us understand and get the order of that. The Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes and Nehemiah and Esther are not the same as those mentioned in Ezra chapter 4. And the Artaxerxes in the book of Nehemiah is not the same king as Ahasuerus in the book of Esther. Different kings from different times. And the Ahasuerus in Esther 1, his Greek name or Grecian name is Xerxes, according to secular history, X-E-R-X-E-S. Xerxes, he reigned about 20 years. And now we have the setting. We're in the Persian Empire, Shushan the palace. Shushan or Susa was the capital of the Persian Empire. It means a lily, said to have received its name from the abundance of the lily in its neighborhood. This would become the capital of the Persian Empire. That's the setting. Okay. Interesting, in the book of Esther, the name of God is not mentioned in the book, but the reader can readily see the prominent hand of God, no doubt. The last of the 12 books of history, Joshua through Esther, brings us to the end of Old Testament history. The books following that we will study all occur within periods of history prior to this time that we've already studied. And we'll point that out as we go. The period of history following the period of restoration is the period between the Testaments, Old and New Testament. And Ezra and Nehemiah was focused upon the Jews in Jerusalem as they had returned. Now Esther really focuses upon the Jews in the Persian Empire. That's a distinction to be made. We have an outline given. Chapter 1, Queen Vashti deposed. Chapter 2, Esther is made queen. And chapter 3, 4, and 5, 6, 7, 8 through 10. Kind of the outline that we follow. We'll begin by highlighting the main characters. Give me one of them. Main character of the book of Esther. Richard? Good, very good. Ahasuerus. Who else? Dead? Vashti? Queen? We'll learn she refused to obey the king's commandment. Who else? Jason? Mordecai. What's something about him? Good. Absolutely, very good. Who else? Haman. Tell me about Haman. Remember anything about Haman? Was he a good man or a bad man? Bad, wasn't he? Wicked. Very proud man. Liked to talk about himself. The Jews' enemy sought to kill them. Esther chapter 3. We learn of Haman's friends and his wife are also mentioned. Esther chapter 5, one place. Not good people. Then who else? Can't leave out Esther. Has two names mentioned in the book. Hadassah means myrtle, and Esther means a star. A young Jewish orphan woman had neither father or mother, 2 verse 7. Was fair and beautiful, certainly was of great character. Very good. Chapter 1, Queen Vashti is deposed. We've already learned in verse 1 that Persian Empire is reigning, Ahasuerus is the king. And this is a major empire reigning from India even into Ethiopia, over 127 provinces. Would have stretched from border to border approximately 2,800 miles. And he sat on the throne in Shushan the palace. In the third year of his reign, he made a feast. What was the purpose of that feast? Good. Verse 4, he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom, the honor of his excellent majesty many days. How long? 180 days, 180 days, 6 months, half a year. A long feast. Showing off the kingdom, the glorious kingdom. And when those days were expired, he made a second feast to all people, both great and small, 7 days. And we have depicted for us some things. It took place in the court of the garden of the king's palace, where were white, green, and blue hangings fastened with cords of fine linen and purple to silver rings and pillars of marble. The beds were of gold and silver upon a pavement of red and blue and white and black and marble. They gave them drink in vessels of gold. They were different from one another, diverse. Royal wine in abundance, according to the state of the king. A rich empire. And royal wine was in abundance. Drinking was according to the law. None did compel, for so the king had appointed to all the officers of his house that they should do according to every man's pleasure. The Persian Empire, the kings are known well for their excessive drinking. And this royal wine was offered, and no limit would have been placed upon their drinking. They were told to drink according to every man's pleasure. That often led to and did lead to their becoming merry with wine. That led to problems. What happened? Verse 10, the king was merry with wine. He made a commandment. He showed off the kingdom. Now he wants to show off the queen. Commands to bring Vashti the queen before the king with the crown royal to show the people and the princes her beauty. Wanted to show her off. But she refused, didn't she? How did the king respond to that? He's wroth, angry. You can respect the queen for refusing to take part in such behavior. But he was angry, very wroth. His anger burned in him. And they asked, what shall we do unto the queen according to the law? Verse 15, because she hath not performed the commandment of the king. They were worried that the rest of the women of the empire would follow suit, follow after the example of the queen, would be rebellious, not obey the commandments of their husbands. And it was advised that Vashti come no more before the king, let her, the king give her royal state unto another, verse 19, who is better than she. That's what happened. And the decree was made, all wives shall give to their husbands honor, both to great and small. Every man should bear rule in his own house. And in chapter 2, verse 1, the king remembered Vashti, what she had done and what was decreed against her. So she's removed from being queen. In the book of Esther, we have Esther who becomes queen because of that and her character and the stand that she takes as queen, God's people being delivered. None of that could have happened if this didn't happen first. If she hadn't become queen, that wouldn't have happened if it weren't for the first queen being removed. So Esther chapters 1 and 2 really set the stage for us and depict how that happened, how it came to pass that Esther did become queen. And that's what takes place in chapter 2 when now the queen's gone, they need a queen. And it's suggested to the king, let there be fair young virgins sought for the king. Gather all the fair young virgins unto Shushan the palace. And there'd be time for their purification. And they would come before the king, and the king would choose the one that pleased him. We're introduced to Mordecai and Esther. We've already mentioned their relationship. They were cousins. In chapter 2, verse 7, Mordecai brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter. She had neither father nor mother. She was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. Illustrates the relationship that they had. He took her for his own daughter. Verse 15, Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter. How else is their relationship described? See anything? Took her for his own daughter, verse 7. Verse 10, she showed not her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it. She was subjective, submissive to Mordecai. Like in verse 20, Esther did the commandment of Mordecai, like as when she was brought up with him. Shows respect, shows obedience, submission to Mordecai. Even though it wasn't her real father, shows that relationship as or for his own daughter. You see Mordecai's concern and care for Esther when he walked every day before the court of the women's house to know how Esther did and what should become of her. And so thus you have the process of the new queen being sought, all these young virgins brought from throughout the empire to the Shushan, the palace. And there was a 12 months, a year worth of their purification. They were given things they needed for that. And when that was ended, they were each brought before the king at evening. They didn't depart until the morrow. And the king chose the one that he loved, that pleased him, that he delighted in. And Esther was chosen. The king loved Esther above all the women. She obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. You have Esther's feast. She made a feast. The king made a great feast, Esther's feast, and what does Mordecai do? 21 to 23. Good. There were Bigthan and Teresh. They sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus, and Mordecai came to know that, told it unto Esther, and the king was delivered from that. Chapter 3. What happens in chapter 3? He does. Haman is promoted by the king. And The king had given a commandment concerning Haman for those to bow down to him, to give him reverence. And Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. And how did Haman respond to that? Not well. He was full of wrath. Thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had showed him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. We once again, as throughout the book, see the pride of Haman. He's angry, full of wrath, because Mordecai won't bow down to him. We're not given a specific reason why Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. It is mentioned that he had told them that he was a Jew in verse 4, and Haman had told the king that their laws are diverse from all people. That suggests because he was a Jew and he had a different standard, the law of God primarily, he refused to bow down and give reverence to Haman. Nonetheless, he was certainly convinced that to bow down to Haman was not right, and he refused to do that, though it meant violating the law. What do you learn from that? It's a good example, Dad. Man of principle. Absolutely. He had great faith. He had great courage, willing to stand for what was right. He didn't compromise. He did not bow down. In order to do what is right, you learn that we must know what is right, be convicted and convinced of it, take a stand for it. If a command was given today, a law put in place to bow down and worship someone or something, or to do something that was wrong, would you do it? Or would you stand? Mordecai refused to do that. So must we. Haman was angry, sought to kill all the Jews to destroy them. He goes to the king. He tells him there's a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom. Their laws are diverse from all people. Neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore, it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed. He says, I'll pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have charge of the business to bring it into the king's treasuries. And the king allowed that, took his ring from his hand and gave it to Haman. But the appeal of Haman is, it's not for the king's profit to suffer them. That's often a repeated theme of adversaries to God's people. Such was the case in Ezra 4. Like in verse 13, when these adversaries wrote to the king at the time, said, be it known unto the king that if this city be builded and the walls set up again, that they will not pay toll, tribute, and custom, and so thou shalt endamage the revenue of the kings. This isn't good for the king. That's their appeal. Verse 21, give ye now commandment to cause these men to cease, that this city be not builded until another commandment. And then verse 22, take ye now that ye fail not to do this, why should damage grow to the hurt of the king? So that's often the appeal of these adversaries to the king in charge. This is against you. This isn't profitable or good for the king for these people to be suffered or allowed. And this is Haman's appeal as well. And letters were sent, verse 13, to destroy, to kill, to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day. And because of this, the city of Shushan was perplexed, turned to confusion. That was a confusing law, decree. Kill all the Jews. Chapters 4 and 5, we have the mourning of the Jews. Esther's courage is seen. And what was the response of the Jews, Mordecai in particular, to this news, to these letters? Yeah, a great mourning. He rent his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, cried with a loud and bitter cry. And there was great mourning among the Jews, verse 3, fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. Can you imagine, as God's people, having this decree come from the king that every one of them, old, young, male, female, are going to be destroyed, killed. If you're a Jew, you're doomed. Imagine the state that they're in. Esther's maids and her chamberlains came and told it to Esther. And the queen was exceedingly grieved. So she sent, trying to comfort Mordecai, raiment. But he refused that. And Mordecai then reveals to Esther all that's happening. the money that Haman had promised to pay the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them, gave a copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, showed to Esther, and he was giving her a charge that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him and to make request before him for her people. That's some charge. And Esther's response to that is the law that's in place. What was the law? What was the risk you'd be taking? Verse 11. Death, her life. There is one law of his to put him to death when one come unto the king into the inner court who is not called. Except if the king would hold out the golden scepter that he may live. She hadn't been called to come into the king for 30 days. Imagine the state, the decree's been made, go as queen before the king and make requests for thy people, intervene for thy people. There's a law in place that says if I do that and I'm not called and he doesn't put out his golden scepter, I'm going to be put to death. Mordecai tells her, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Would you have said that to Esther, one who you've taken in as your own daughter? First of all, shows his great faith. It's a statement of great faith that he trusted deliverance to come from somewhere, either way. He had full assurance, confidence that God would deliver his people. And who knoweth whether that deliverance is to come through you, Esther, that you've been put in this place at this time in the kingdom for this purpose, for the deliverance of God's people, the Jews. How would you have responded? Great faith in God. And we can learn from that as well. No matter what we're facing, no matter what we're up against, we can rest assured that deliverance will come. God's in control. We can put our faith in Him. You see great courage from Esther. She took a stand for what was right. You see true self-denial and sacrifice for God, His people, and for right. We need more people like this, where in verse 16, she said, go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan and fast ye for me and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. What a statement. And what an example. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. In our faith, living according to God's will, it requires that we take stands, requires that we make sacrifices. Do we have that kind of courage and faith to say, so be it, if I perish, I perish? Mordecai and Esther both expressed this attitude in two ways. Mordecai refused to do something that was wrong, and Esther took a stand for what was right, did what was right. We may be tested today. I'm asked to do something that is wrong. There's going to be great consequences if I don't do that thing. Will I refuse to do it? If I perish, I perish. We may be put in a position where we need to take a stand for what is right. We need to do what's right. And in order to do that, there's going to be great consequences, great sacrifice. It may even mean my life. Will we do that? If I perish, I perish. I'm going to do it. May that be our attitude. That's the great courage and faith expressed through Mordecai and Esther. And oftentimes when such a stand is taken, it's one that's taken alone. Are you willing to stand alone? Will we stand alone? I hope so. So chapter 5, Esther goes before the king, and the king accepts her or refuses her? Accepts her, holds out the golden scepter, and asks what her request is. Her request is to come into a banquet that she has prepared for him. Haman and the king make haste, they do that. And then at that banquet, the request is, come to another banquet that I'll prepare for tomorrow. And In response to this, verse 9, what does Haman do? He goes forth with a, what kind of a heart? Joyful and a glad heart. But that was soon turned when he saw Mordecai in the king's gate. He stood not up nor moved for him, for he was full of indignation against Mordecai. Haman refrained himself. He came home, sent and called for his friends and his wife. And here's Haman's language. I went through and highlighted the personal statements like his and him and him and myself and I, many of them, told them of the glory of his riches, the multitude of his children, all the things when the king had promoted him. You might say that he's bragging. He's been advanced. And he's been invited to this banquet, just him and the king. Look how great I am. But none of this availeth me anything. You learn from him that happiness isn't in material things. That's a good lesson you learn from him. And also that happiness can be destroyed when it comes to one's personal hatred for another, which comes from a place of pride and arrogance. Verse 14, none of this availeth me anything, verse 13. And verse 14, here's the advice, recommendation from his wife. Just have him killed. Let a gallows be made 50 cubits high and speak to the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Shows how wicked these people were. Then, once you've had him killed and murdered, then you can go on your way merrily. And he would be pleased. Imagine your wife telling you, just go have him killed, then you'll be merry, then you'll be pleased. Wicked people. It pleased Haman. He caused the gallows to be made. What happened that night? The king couldn't sleep. So he had the records brought in. He was had them read to him, and he found written therein of the account in chapter 2, 21 to 23, when Mordecai had revealed the two who were seeking to lay hand on the king. And what honor has been done to Mordecai for this? Nothing had been done. Just so happened that Haman was in that court. Here he came. And he was coming to request of the king to have Mordecai hanged, killed. So Haman came in. The king said to him, what shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Haman thought only of himself. Whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself? Let the royal apparel be brought. Let him ride upon the king's horse. So on and so forth. And the king said to Haman, make haste, take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. And he did that. He did that. But he came again to the king's gate, and he hasted to his house mourning and having his head covered. You can only imagine how he was feeling. And his face when he was told to honor Mordecai. And then you have them, the king and Mordecai, or Haman, coming to the banquet Esther had prepared in chapter 7. And the king asks again, what is thy petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted thee. What is thy request? It shall be performed, even to half of the kingdom. And Esther, queen, answered, said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. That was her request, her own life and her people's. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. And the king answered, who is he? Where is he that durst pursue in his heart to do so? And once again, Esther revealed Haman as the wicked person, the adversary. The adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. And certainly Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. The king went out to the palace garden. He was angry, full of wrath. And in that time, Haman is begging for his life, Queen Esther. King returns, finding Haman fallen upon the bed where Esther was. Will he force the queen also before me in the house? The king responds. They covered Haman's face, and it was suggested and done. Haman was hanged on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. What a turn in events. And chapter 8 through 10, you have the deliverance and the feast of Purim. Though Haman had been killed, the one responsible, the law was still put in place. It was irreversible. The law of the Persian Empire was that it couldn't be reversed, not even by the king himself, once the law had been made, chapter 8, verse 8. And Esther appeals to the king and begs, can this be reversed? Let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, verse 5. Do away with this law that's pronounced upon against the Jews. And the king tells her that may no man reverse, verse 8. So he does the next best thing. He, of course, puts Esther over the house of Haman, and Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. And the king's ring is given to Mordecai. And they're allowed to make laws, and that's what they do. He writes a law in the king's name, giving the Jews the right to defend themselves. Verse 11, wherein the king granted the Jews, which were in every city, to gather themselves together, to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them. And the Jews should be ready against that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. Verse 13. So you have really two contradictory laws put in place. That happens when man's in charge. God's law doesn't contradict itself. But that law was irreversible, so they make a new law to contradict it, giving the people right to defend themselves. That's what they do. They gather themselves together in chapter 9, verse 2. No man could withstand them. And all the rulers of the provinces, the lieutenants, the deputies, officers of the king, they helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. Mordecai was great in the king's house, waxed greater and greater. He would be promoted, chapter 10, to second in command. Thus the Jews smote all their enemies. They've been delivered. How many did they kill? They slew how many of the people?
Verse 16 says 75,000.
Good. 75,000 plus 300 and 500. Verse 12, 500 men in Shushan the palace. And verse 15, they slew 300 men at Shushan as well. 75,800. After that, they rested, made a day of feasting and gladness. And that's when this feast of Purim was put in place. It was find my place here. Named after the lots cast by Haman, chapter 9, verse 24. Remember, he cast lots. Named after that. Days of feasting and joy, and stood as a memorial of their deliverance. What do you want to bring out about the book of Esther? Anything stands out to you from the events we've just looked at? Certainly you see God's providence suggested in chapter 4, verse 14, and really throughout all the events in the book. You see God's hand. Definition of providence of God. That means God working within the natural realm without violating natural law nor man's free will. God works today. He did then. He does today. Though miracles, supernatural, things that violate the laws of nature aren't performed. They were. We read about those oftentimes, like in the New Testament. But God still works. He works within the realm of nature without violating natural laws and without violating human's free will. Man does have free will. He does have choice. And though we don't know everything about it, we don't know exactly how God does that at times, we simply know that he does. And that's seen so well in the book of Esther. Like in Daniel 4, verse 17, we learn that God rules in the kingdoms of men. Isaiah 55, 8 and 9, the Lord's thoughts and ways are far higher than our own. And God has created the world and us, establishing natural laws that man cannot violate, giving man free will, choice. But God is still able to work, fulfill his purpose, work out things according to his will without violating those things. Shows how great and powerful God is, reflects how small we are, and really it gives great comfort knowing that God is in control. He rules, and we can put our full trust in him and have peace and comfort no matter what we go through. Seen in several places in Esther, Like in 1 verse 19, the queen being deposed, Esther cannot have been in position to deliver God's people if those events didn't take place and the queen hadn't been deposed. 2 verse 17, out of all the other women, the young virgins that were brought before the king, Esther was chosen. 2 verse 23, when Mordecai had revealed the men seeking to kill the king, he wasn't rewarded at first. It was a handful of years later that he was honored, and it happened to be at the exact time that Haman was coming seeking to kill Mordecai. Chapter 3, verse 7, the death of the Jews was decided by casting lots, and because of that, it was delayed about a full year, so they had time for these events to happen, for preparation. 4, verse 14, we see that it may very well be that Esther was put in the position she was to deliver God's people, and she did have a great part in the deliverance of God's people. Chapter 6, 1, the king couldn't sleep that night. Had it been the night before, the night after, things would have been very different. But he couldn't sleep that night. Had him read to him the Chronicles. They happened to read the account of Mordecai, thus leading to his being honored at that time, delaying his being hanged. So throughout all these events, you see God's hand in it. What do you learn from it that you want to bring out? Lessons from Esther. Absolutely.
And that gives me great courage to know and understand. Sometimes we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, if we just have faith, we know that God does work problems today. And He will work it out to the best of His people.
Absolutely. And you see that so well in other accounts, like the story of Joseph towards the end of Genesis, when God's providence is certainly seen. And we see that so well when you have these events. These were years in the making, but you have these events all compiled, and we're able to just read through these events in order as they occurred. They didn't have that view like we have. They were right in it. And though they didn't know how things were going to end, things were going to turn out, they still had the faith that God would bring deliverance and just take a stand for what was right, even though it meant their life. Charles?
It's kind of interesting here, too. Consider just like back through the book of Judges, the different people, personalities, walks of life that God has, I guess, called on to deliver His people. All, you know, from people like Samson, who's big and strong, Gideon to Esther here, that being I would call humble, attractive looking young woman to deliver the Jews. It's just interesting that you talk about providence, the different walks of life and personalities and things and types of people that He has called on different times to respond to deliver the people.
Very good, exactly right. And no doubt we do see God's hand in it when you recognize we have a young, orphan, Jewish woman who rises to become queen and deliver God's people. And though she was a young, orphan, Jewish woman, she was a woman of great faith and courage. And it was that type of character that God was able to work through to deliver His people. We need that type of character today, all of us. And we need young women and young men, young people as well, who are of great faith, just like Esther was. And I'll point out that God's providence does not eliminate human action. There must be the action on man's part. Many have the false view of God's sovereignty and His work in the world today and His providence, and they would suggest that since God's in control, man doesn't need to do anything, that God's going to do what He's going to do, and I have no part in that. And so I'm just going to sit here idle, not say anything, not do anything, and just let God work that out. And that's not how it works. That's a false view. Esther did not say, nor did Mordecai tell Esther, don't do anything, sit idle. God will deliver us. We'll sit and wait for that to happen. God delivered his people through one who took a great stand, who risked her life, who took action, who did what was right. God delivered his people when Mordecai took courage, gave good advice to Esther, took action. Once he was promoted, he wrote letters and waxed great and put fear in the people as well. That's the kind of people God worked through to deliver his people. We talked a little bit about that in Acts 16 Sunday with Paul and Silas, who were sent to preach the gospel and in the Macedonian call. And that wasn't easy. They were beaten. They were put in prison. But it was through that, men who were willing to endure that, that the gospel was furthered, the will of God was furthered, the conversion of the jailer. That may not have ever happened if it weren't for men who were willing to go through what they went through. Paul and Silas didn't stand idle and say, God's in control. He'll work that out. He'll go and do that. I'm not going to do anything. I can't have a part in that. I'm just going to let God work that out. That's not how it works. So the question for us today, are we usable by God in a sense? Are we of that character? Are we willing to take a stand? Are we faithful? Are we willing to suffer that God's will may be furthered through us? Those who sit idle and say, I'm not going to do anything, God will take care of it. They're not doing anything to further God's will. And perhaps God will take care of that by finding a man who is of great faith and who will do the work necessary to work his purpose. Is that us? Results come when people took action. Results come when we take action today. We as the people of God need to be willing to pay a price and stand alone. We learned that from Esther so well. Being willing to stand alone, take a stand, do what is right, refuse to do wrong, even though it means my life. We need Esther's attitude, as well as Mordecai's, their faith, their courage, their self-denial. Though none go with me, I still will follow. Quickly, there's two kinds of people I listed in the book of Esther, specifically between Esther and Mordecai, and then Haman and his family and friends. There were God's people, and there were not God's people. There were those who served God, those who served self, those who sacrificed self for others, Mordecai and Esther, and then Haman and those who sacrificed others for self. There were those whose plans harmonized with God's will, and those whose plans were against God. There were those who stood for God's people, and there were those who stood against God's people. There were those who had good character. They were sincere. They had great faith. They were courageous. They were submissive. There were those who had an evil character, deceit, anger, wrath, pride, murder. And in the end, Esther and Mordecai were honored. God's people were delivered. Haman was destroyed and killed. Which one are we? And all those who fought against the Jews when the time came, 75,800 were killed. Which one are we? What people are we among? No one can defeat God. We must stand for God and not oppose him. If we do so, we will not succeed. God's people are preserved, delivered, and rejoice when one takes a stand for what is right. The same today. God's people are destroyed when sin is tolerated, compromise occurs. And through reading and studying the book of Esther, I gather great, great peace and comfort no matter what we're facing today. Put your faith in God. Take comfort in his providential care. Stand assured in his promises. That means you remain faithful to him. Conduct yourself in a way that reflects that confidence and comfort. So many times today, even Christians, they face a trial, face adversity. They're going through something and they just act like there's no hope. The world's coming to an end. And really, that's not a good attitude. That's not a mindset or character that Christians should reflect. It shows a lack of faith in God, a lack of trust in him. They were facing complete destruction, annihilation. And yet within that, Mordecai was willing to say deliverance will come from somewhere. And even to go as far as suggesting that Esther, whom he no doubt loved, that you may have been put in this place for that deliverance to come through. I'm suggesting that you take the stand that's necessary for what is right. And though it means your life, you've got to do this. That takes great comfort, great faith, and it provides great comfort knowing that God's in control. You learn pride goeth before destruction, Proverbs 16:18 from Haman. Absolutely. Anything else you want to bring out? So many lessons that could be pointed out and learned from. Some I wrote down. Anything else? Hopefully that was helpful to you. Certainly was to me studying it. Such a great book. Thanks for your being here and kind attention.